Welcome to the Brew Drink Run podcast, brought to you by the only website that promotes brewing your own beer, consuming the best craft beers in the world, and then running off the calories, brewdrinkrun.com.
Hey, Macarena, this is episode 160 of the Brew, Drink, Run podcast. Presumably the only podcast where people talk about beer and running and homebrewing or not. My name is Lee.
This is Keith.
I'm Raymond.
If this is your first time listening to the show, this is our big show. On the big show, we do talk about our big three topics, homebrewing, craft beer, and running. The previous episode and the next episode are short episodes where we just really get nerdy about one specific style or region or aspect of beer. If you like the show, don't forget to rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you grab your podcasts to write a short review. Does anybody use Google Play? Let us know. Those ratings and reviews help more people to find the show. You can also tell a friend by posting about the show on Facebook or Twitter. Do that. Tag us at Brew Drink Run. This week, we will talk about beer. We will talk about that weird beeping noise.
we're all looking around. There's this weird beeping noise going on. We don't know what
whatever.
It is.
I'm sure it's fine. We will definitely talk about homebrewing, you guys.
Good.
And I don't know, running. We'll talk about bikes. What is that beeping noise?
What is going on?
Raymond. Are the brownies burning? Uh-oh. This is not good.
We left the refrigerator door open.
Okay.
That's a pretty smart fridge.
Yeah,
I've never heard that before.
Wow.
I would not have gone to the fridge to shut it either. I would have walked around this whole house trying to figure out what alarm had gone off.
We do start our shows off with a beer after we've left the fridge door open. Keith, what beer are we starting with today?
Today we have a collaboration between Green Bench Brewing Company and St. Somewhere Brewing Company. This was brewed at the Green Bench facility in St. Petersburg, Florida. This is Monsieur Ed. So this is an oak fermented farmhouse ale. Comes in at 5.8% ABV. So this is one of those 375 milliliter bottles, or 1.9 fluid ounces. So we've got ourselves a nice little saison to try.
I picked this up in Jacksonville, Florida on our recent trip down at Beer 30. Shout out to Beer 30.
Beer 30.
Nice little beer store there in a cute little downtown area. I can say that, cute little area.
Yeah, it's not downtown, though.
It's not downtown-ish. It looks like a small town downtown.
Yeah, it
is not Jacksonville's downtown. It just kind of has that little old...
Riverside.
Riverside. I knew there had to be some name. You knew what it was. Yep. Now, the reason I picked this up, I've had beers from both of these breweries before, so collaboration between them, you know, sounded great, but I really picked it up because of the label art. Raymond,
you did not
tell us what this bottle art looks like.
I've got to say, outside of maybe a couple of against the grain bottles, this is one of the more disturbing labels I've ever seen on a bottle of beer.
Wow
yeah,
wow. So tell us why you find this disturbing.
So weird. All right, so Monsieur Ed, I guess, is represented here by a horse wearing sunglasses, and he seems to have chest hair.
Mm-hmm. I don't see a problem so far.
He's being ridden by two men, one who is balding, who has similar chest hair.
Again, that sounds great so far. I'm totally on board. He's got a horse with a bald dude on it. Yep.
Goatee, and he's wearing glasses. And then the guy in the back of the horse is... I don't know. He's got like a long, dark, luscious hair and a beard, and he looks tanned compared to the other guy.
This sounds great.
This is the most, it is pretty disturbing.
And the colors on this are so garish. It's like this aquamarine sky and this pseudo, almost orangish ground, and it's just clash.
I will say that when I saw the bottle at first, I thought it was a Prairie Artisan ale.
Absolutely.
Because there is an illustrative style in a lot of their bottles that this kind of reminded me of. I mean, Prairie has a lot of diversity in their label art, but there's maybe one artist who has worked for Prairie who had something similar that kind of caught my eye. Also, is it not Crooked Stave? What's the name of the brewery that does like the birthday sour? What's the illustrative style?
Uinta.
Uinta.
Yeah.
I feel like it's not Uinta is much more developed
than these, but they have more of a almost like a chalk pencil kind of look to them. They're like in that kind, they're on that kind of like thinner paper label. So they have a little bit of a different look to them, so.
I can hear Keith. I can't
okay,
hear you.
Okay, yeah. I'm definitely coming in there.
Well, because there's...
There you go.
Wow, there's a short in my microphone. How long has that been here?
Just then.
Just then?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was that... It popped out and it popped in. And
woo! This is the best episode ever because I'm not editing any of this out. Because this conversation we're having about Uinta's paper is riveting.
Yes. I mean, we cannot lose this. We're gonna win awards for this one.
All right, everybody quiet and clean break. Edit point there. Okay.
Okay.
So we're back. I mean, we didn't go anywhere. Yeah. All right. So pretty crazy label and a collaboration between two breweries that I've only had positive experiences with. So I was happy to try a farmhouse ale, a saison fermented in oak barrels.
Yep.
Is that what have we got here?
It says okay. Oak fermented farmhouse ale. So.
All right, Raymond, you have poured this into a glass, or Keith has poured it for us into glasses. What does the beer itself look like?
Well, the beer itself is a nice kind of golden yellow, little hints of orange in there. Very thickly cloudy, poured with a nice big kind of fluffy head, which is diminished a little bit, but it's still there. Mine has some really dark floaters in it. I don't know
if you must have gotten.
I think I got the dregs.
Yeah, I think you got the end of the bottle there.
I've got some too. Yeah. I've got some.
They've accumulated now in the bottom of the glass.
Yeah, but, I've got some chunkiness. But per style and such, I mean, it's not
nothing out of ordinary,
out of the realm of possibility for a beer like this. What's the nose saying to you over there, Keith?
It's nice. It's very very effervescent, and that's almost what I smell. It's almost like this bright. Natural CO2 kind of carbonation, maybe a little bit of lemon citrus, lemongrass or something like that going on. That's kind of the majority of what I get on this. A little bit of that just sort of barnyard funkiness, you know, mustiness.
That was primary for me, was that barnyard funkiness. And then later on, as it's after the first couple of sniffs, it's now mellowed into that lemony citrus.
I'm definitely getting the lemony citrus really bright. And I honestly expected there to be more of the funk or more of a sour smell to it. Just with, you know, thinking about oak barrel fermenting and, you know, what may be living in that barrel and what may happen to the beer. So for me, surprisingly clean on the initial aroma with that really nice bright hit of lemon or lemongrass for sure. And flavor. Keith, you had a sip. What do you think on flavor on this?
Initially, I'm going to say surprisingly dry. The oak, the barrel is really, I think, kind of the star player in this beer. I'm getting that dry oak wood, very woody flavor to it. Not getting that citrus that I was getting in the aroma. I think it would benefit the beer a little bit if it had a little bit of that kind of, even if it wasn't sweet, but even if it had a little bit of citrus or tartness to it. But it's very, very, very dry, very woody, very, very much the barrel itself.
Yes, 100%, Raymond.
Lee's making faces.
No, it's not a bad face.
No, it's not. It's that coating on the tongue that just real dryness. I get a little grassiness in there too.
Sure.
Barnyard flavor again, but it is super dry.
Is this the horse blanket so many people like to talk about? Because I've never chewed on one. So
I think the horse blanket is much more an aromatic part of that as well. I think just because I mean wet horse is disgusting. Like you would know if it was horse blanket. That's one of those such a distinct phrases that you would know if it was that. But yeah, it is so dry, and there is shockingly not a whole lot to talk about in terms of the beer flavor itself. I mean, it's a little bit of, I maybe get a little bit of lemon, but I mean, just a little bit, and a little bit of hay or grass, but just a little bit.
I mean, this is about the barrel and the yeast. I mean, it's the malt bill, the grain, any hops that were really probably used in this are all, I mean, almost secondary in the taste. It's almost one of those beers that I I'm almost enjoying because of the experience, not necessarily because of the overall flavor and complexity of the beer. It's just sometimes when you have something that's so extreme, it's interesting, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's kind of where I'm at with this beer at the moment. Is I kind of want to keep drinking it because it's so interesting, not necessarily because it's one of the best saisons I've ever had.
No, and it's really an interesting one to think about how to recommend it or how to describe it, because I mean, at this point, it's kind of odd to find a beer that you are pressed to find a touchstone for. You know, what other beer have I had that also tastes like this?
I'm sure I've come across some saisons can be this way. I mean, they can be so dominated by the yeast strain and be so funky and kind of weird. I'm sure that I've come across some stuff that would be like this, but there are also beers that don't stay with you. Mm-hmm. So to say I remember that, I would probably have to, you know, go through, you know, my spreadsheet of beers and say, just search for dry funky, you know, and then see what pops up kind of thing.
But the barrel piece for this, for me, and I mean, a lot of those saisons wouldn't necessarily be barrel aged or barrel fermented at that point. And so I feel like for me, it really is about that wood. It's not, I mean, the yeast is there and I'm sure the base saison is perfectly fine, but it's hard to tell at this point what that really tastes like with the barrel in this.
Yeah.
So interesting. I'm interested to learn more about this beer and what their collaboration process was. Who is the guy on the front of the horse? Who's the guy on the back of the horse?
Don't you think that's the brewers?
Got to be. It's got to be someone involved with those breweries. I mean, has to be.
Are you sure?
Come on. I mean.
Have you done your homework on this?
No, but
have you?
Have you?
Lord, no. Okay. I just buy the beer. I don't like look it up or anything.
No, I mean, I would guess those are the two guys who either the two head brewers or the two guys that worked on this particular beer together, and they have a really very good sense of humor to let themselves be pictured in such a way. So.
When we are not drinking really interesting beers like Monsieur Ed from Green Bench with Saint Somewhere. We are oftentimes trying to make our own. And so since our last podcast recording, my homebrew that I've talked about on the last couple of big shows has completed the process, has carbonated, is drinkable, is beer that is ready to be consumed. I meant to bring some for you guys tonight, but I did not. So we'll have to table that for another time. It's fine.
Oh, good.
It's... It's very hoppy. The experimental hop 07762 or whatever it was. I'll put that in the show notes. I'll look it up again from Hopsteiner. It's really a dense hop. Like it's 16.8 alpha acidity, and the dry hopping and the flame out hop additions of the lemon drop, I don't get at all in it, because I feel like that the base hop that I used was so ridiculously strong, overpowering. So, but I like it. I do like that base hop, the amount of really kind of chewiness to it. It's really kind of interesting.
Now, this was a pale ale. Is that right?
It's a pale ale, but my ABV came in at like 7.5%.
So really, we're talking about an imperial pale ale, if not an India pale ale.
Right. And that's kind of what I was thinking when I was putting it together, because if you know anything about me, it's like, well, if the ABV is not worth making, why are you making it? Because I'm a lush. So if I'm going to have beer to drink around the house, it's not going to be table beer, you guys. So the one thing that really is holding this beer back for me is the fact that it was an extract brew. And I think I've just got to be done with that at this point, because there were just things that are out of my control at that point. You know, I wanted to have a different, I mean, the color is one thing, you know, you kind of get that middle brown in a lot of these beers. And honestly, for the ABV that this beer has, it's not going to be a really bright golden beer. But there's something about that malt character, and I don't think it matters, you know, how light of malts I'm using in this beer, if I'm using the Brias Golden or if I'm using a Pils malt, or I think this is a combination of the two. It's still that same kind of middle of the road, not interesting. There's a certain kind of character to it that it just kind of tastes like a homebrew. You know what I mean?
I know what you mean.
And so I think that I'm just kind of done with that. And so I did an all grain batch this past week over at Corbin. You guys know Corbin from a couple episodes ago, sat on the show. He talked about his system a little bit. And so I went over to help him on a Belgian golden batch there. So it ended up, I think we were brewing at like a 10 gallon capacity for that, for that brew. And I've gotten to follow along with the process. So from working with him on that system, he had a recipe already. So I kind of just came in to help out on brew day. And then also today, I've got a gouge in my hand from cleaning kegs. Shout out to all the keg cleaners out there. It's a fun job. And so it's and it has its own little quirks. And it's obviously a lot more work. It's a much longer brew day to do all grain, as a lot of listeners, I'm sure, know. A much different kind of class and caliber of equipment. You've got to have more of it. You've got to be much more on top of your temperatures and your timings and your amounts. And it, because it's much more similar to a real production brewing environment, there are a lot more variables that you can screw up or that have the opportunity to affect your recipe in one way or the other. At the end of the day, if you follow the steps, you're going to make beer, but is it going to be the beer you wanted to make or not? So with this one today, we actually cold crashed today. We're having some trouble with the temperature controlled fridge. So we're doing a cold crash into a different fridge. The fermenter was in a temperature controlled area. And then we're going to carbonate after that. So we had a little sample of it today. And unfortunately, the one big flub we had on brew day was evident in the flavor of the beer. So we didn't pour it yet. We're going to go ahead and carbonate it and we're going to see how it tastes at the end of the day. But one of the hop sacks got wrapped around a heating element in
a little bit there
in our kettle. So yeah, and that was something we did not notice until it transferred out. And so there is, you know, you hear about, you know, toasted malts, but nobody really talks about toasted hops
toasted
in beers.
Hops are it's not a common phrase.
Nobody
in
talks
drinking.
About, you know, the real like burnt cotton muslin bag aspect of beer. I feel like this is a great with a Belgian golden that's just, you know, a beautiful, super light, super crisp beer. That's the perfect avenue to let that shine.
Yeah, just notes like, of, with notes of house fire. It's lovely.
There's no way to hide that in a beer like this. It's not some big burly thing. It just kind of has a little bit of a plasticky or a, you know, that kind of.
Yeah.
There is a little bit of a smoky element, which in and of itself might not be bad. Might be kind of interesting.
You know, sometimes carbonating things up can sort of mask some of the flaws of any beer. And and once it feels like a beer and, you know, mostly tastes like one, you'll probably be fine drinking it.
I'm hopeful, you know, but at the same time, if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. I can say that I didn't spend money on those ingredients. Thanks a lot, Corbin. That's another thing with all grain. I mean, you're making more of it. I mean, your ingredients cost more, and it's just a lot more work. It's a lot more to keep up with. I'm saying this to Keith, and he's just like glazed over looking at me.
No, I mean, it's true. Anytime we have a little small batch that goes awry, you know, it's always frustrating. We'll have to try it again. We don't bag our hops, and when we put them in the boil, they just kind of go in. I guess he doesn't have like a filter screen or something in the bottom of his kettle, or is
not in this one. There's another one with a false bottom, so it just kind of depends.
Yeah, so you know, when you have the false bottom, you can just toss the hops in, and you know, as you knock out, you pretty much, you know, keep the hops from going into the fermenter that way. So not something, and you know, and you know, the heating elements, you know, at least on the tippies we have that we use at work are all outside of the kettle, you know, so you know, it's just different styles of homebrew equipment, you know, and different things. And, you know, but there's always some sort of pitfall or part that can be broken or that kind of thing. Did you guys get pre-milled?
We did
grain
buy pre-milled. Yeah. Okay. It's also really fun to I've done that with Andrew. Shout out to Andrew on his system with hooking up a drill to his little grain mill. Yeah, and doing that there, it's kind of fun too. Again, that adds to your brew day.
it's not that long. I mean, we use one of those at work too for our really small batches, you know, and it's just of course, we got one in, and we like basically tore through it and busted it up in like no time. We had to buy another one because I don't think they expect it to be run like 2 to 3 times a week. You know, it's like for the guy who brews like maybe once or twice a month tops. You know, so there is a lifespan to those things depending on how much you use them. But yeah, no, there's always little things like that can kind of go awry, or you think you have the ingredients that you did, and so you have to alter on the fly. Say, yeah. Well, we didn't have vanilla bean. What are we going to use, or something like that? You know, so if you don't have time to run to the store and get what you need, you know.
Yeah, but it was a lot of fun to brew on a system that was just so much more mature than what I'm used to, with like, you know, tri-clamps and, you know, everything mm-hmm. all kind of fancy, and you know, thermometers everywhere and gauges and dials and ooh, what's that? sparge arms and yeah. all kind of fun things that I got
ready
to
upgrade. Are you just going to use his stuff?
I'm just going to use his stuff. I'm not going to pay for this stuff. That stuff is expensive. I'm going to mooch off him as long as I can. And, you know, he's also got the 4-tap kegerator. So, hey, there's room in there for more beer. I just have to get that kegerator to my house somehow. that's the final step in my little plan. Raymond, how is... I know you're not brewing yet. You're nope. still working on your build out.
Soon.
But are you planning on any changes to your kind of brew setup? Have you, you've had a lot of time to think about it. Is there like a wish list of what you want to do?
Well, I've thought about making that jump to all grain just because I lost a lot of the gear, and I have always had that same problem that you were just talking about, the extract flavor. And I've wanted to be able to really kind of control the recipes and really kind of goof off with them. To me, that's the most exciting part of home brewing, is just being able to experiment and screw around and make mistakes, hopefully not burning things in the middle of things, but, you know.
Whatever.
You don't want toasted and hopped? Hey, fine.
I guess that's fine. That's fine for you. When we're not drinking beer and making beer, we are trying to find ways to keep those calories from adding up. Raymond, you did a race recently.
It wasn't really a race.
You did an extravaganza of fun.
Indeed.
Tell us about your extravaganza of fun.
So we had spring break here not too long ago. So my family and I went on a cruise, Disney cruise to be specific, and they have their own private island, because of course Disney does. And one of the things that they do is when you go to this island, they have a run, and it's called the Castaway Key 5K. And you get off the ship and you go for a 5K run around the island, and it's kind of cool. So it's kind of
fun. Is it actually is it not timed or not?
It's not timed or anything. Okay. There are a lot more people there than I expected because it starts super early. We had to be ready and signed up by 8 o'clock, which, you know, is pretty early for a cruise vacation kind of thing. Tried to get my family to do it with me, but they would not get up and move. So I did it by myself. But went, and there were about 300 people participating in this thing. Hmm. And we got a nice little... sat around and got a little kind of tour of the course. And then we went out and they started us off, took us to the starting spot, and we ran around the island, got to see a couple of places in the island that I don't think most people go. So I enjoyed that. It wasn't timed or anything. I took it really easy. Haven't been running much lately. So, it was good to not feel that pressure. And, but had a good time. So everybody was really kind of fun and took it easy, except for two guys who had to bust the whole thing out and make the rest of us look bad, but you know, whatever.
Was there a medal or anything at the end or no?
Yeah. They give you, everybody got a number.
Oh.
You got a little kind of plastic medal at the end for participation medal.
Oh,
very cute Disney experience.
So recommended. You had a good time with it.
Oh, I did. Again, it was just fun to be in other parts of the island that otherwise everybody was on the beach and we got to wander around.
Sorry, something different. Anyways,
all right. So that's been my running for the, because I didn't prep for it or anything. It was totally about just going out and enjoying the day.
Well, good. Good. That's great. I haven't been running a ton. I mean, I've kind of cut back a little bit. I'm still doing 2 days a week, pretty solid. But I've taken one of those run days and added another run day and added another day as a cycling day. So I'm running 2 days and cycling 2 days and trying to up my distance on that and get faster. There's some kind of block I have about kind of going faster than like 16 miles an hour for some reason, probably because of like strength and I have to pedal faster. I don't know. Or like go into a lower or a higher gear. I don't know. But it's fun. It's fun to do something different. The real downside with cycling is you don't burn anywhere near the same number of calories in the same amount of time as you do running.
Yeah.
And so that's a real downer that I've got to spend twice as long out riding to get anywhere close to the same amount of calories. So it's more of a time commitment. And, you're working different things. It's not the same kind of cardio workout that you get from running. So it's different, but I'm enjoying doing something that's physical, but a little bit different. And it was one of those things that if you got a bike, it's like running. If you got running shoes, you can go run.
Right.
And if you got a bike, you can go cycling. It's something that I don't require a gym membership to do or any of that kind of stuff. I can just throw out the bike and go out and do it if I've got the time.
Right.
So, and that part of the schedule is making the time.
Yeah.
So that's been good. And I'm one of those people who likes to run first thing in the morning before it starts to get hot or, before my work day starts or whatever. But with cycling, I don't mind going out at noon or even in the afternoon, so I can be more flexible with it because, again, it's not the same type of workout as running. Keith, what are you doing these days?
Not much in the exercise world. I mean, just regular workout. But it's interesting talking about cycling. I feel like some of my foot issues have been not as bad as they have been. I'm not sure what I haven't done anything to actually make that stop. So I'm not really saying I'm going to put the running shoes back on and go running, but it's been better. I haven't had as much, soreness and pain in the mornings and stuff. But when I was really going through that, I started to think about, well, maybe I should just get on the bike and start riding, and after coming home from work, because it would be less stress on those particular things. And it's, there's different, like you said, you're working different things. So, there would be, drawbacks and whatever, but just trying to think of ways to get some extra exercise in. But you're right, you talk about time, it always seems like there's almost just not enough time in the day, especially, you get home at anywhere between 4:30 and 6:30, and there's always some thing that needs to be done or some errand that has to be run. So I've been trying to figure out a way to maybe get some time in to start maybe getting back out on the bicycle and just even if it's just riding around the neighborhood for a mile or two, just to get a little bit of extra cardio kind of exercise in.
Yeah, for sure.
And what about reading? There's a leisure time activity that will help you learn things you'd like to know about many subjects.
Raymond's Book Corner.
What is that?
It's the last time we did it. You had this delightful little laugh in it. And I just decided, actually, I didn't decide anything. Andrew, our buddy Andrew, sent me a text and he was like, okay, the last episode, you need to make that the new segue bump because that is wonderful. So I need to label that properly. So that's our new Raymond's Book Corner segue bump, complete
Andrew.
Pre-recorded laugh in the intro there. Raymond's Book Corner. Raymond recommends a book to us that no one wants to read, so why not let someone else read it to you? That's right. You can go to Audible. Audible is a audiobook company where you can get digital audiobooks. If you go to audibletrial.com/brewdrinkrun, you can get a book for free. You like people talking to you. People are talking to you right now. Why not have someone talk to you about this book? Raymond, what book is it?
Well, I'm going to go to an author that I swear I've this is probably the last book in his entire oeuvre that I have not read. But Christopher Moore, I think we've done all of his books on the podcast at one time or another. This one's called The Fool, and it's kind of a body take on Shakespeare's King Lear from the perspective of the fool. And it's a lot of fun, and just like all of Christopher Moore's are, a little sexier than maybe some of his other books, but a lot of fun.
What a great recommendation. That sounds like a wonderful book. Thanks. Oh, thanks, cool. Raymond. That sounds really good.
You're very welcome.
I really do mean it. That sounds The Fool by this
Christopher Moore.
Yeah, that we talk about all the time. That sounds like a great book. Thanks.
You're welcome.
How sexy are we talking, like on a scale of 1 to 10?
8.
Whoa.
Super sexy.
Well,
maybe
10
7.
Was actually not sexy at all.
Oh.
I didn't say what how the scale went. And then he said 8, so right. We were stuck with it. All right, so for this book or any of the tens of thousands of other books they have at Audible, go to audibletrial.com/brewdrinkrun. Get a free audiobook. We'll get like 55 cents, and we will spend that 55 cents on a new cable for my microphone or maybe some soldering iron to fix that loose little bit. We'll be right back. Welcome back, friends and family. This is the grand tasting segment of our show. Keith's pouring a beer. I'm going to go rinse out my glass and let Keith tell you all about it.
What we have today is a beer from Hardywood Park Craft Brewery. This is going to be Ruse. It is their Imperial Milk Stout, aged in red wine barrels. Comes in at a fairly massive 11.3% ABV, and it does also indicate that this is, in fact, the 2017 vintage of this beer. I do believe they sent this out to Lee. We'll have to confirm with him when he comes back. So I do believe this was, in fact, provided for us. And Lee is back with his glass. I want to go ahead and fill that.
So thanks to Hardywood for sending us
play
this.
Play by play. Fantastic job.
Uh-huh. And I'm going to slide this over to Raymond because there's actually some like real art on there to talk about for a change. Looks like there's an actual fairly intricate painting on that is the label art.
Yeah, that is. It's kind of scary looking, but very elaborate kind of portrait here. Multiple mouths, a little distortion, but the... kind of the brushwork and the line usage on here is really cool and active. Kind of a monochromatic palette, but with some kind of browns and golds coming mm-hmm. through. It's really
the
cool
artist name is on the side. Yeah, if you look, turn it over to the side.
Let's give him some a shout out here. Oh, I'm not finding it.
It's I think underneath the Hardywood Brewed with Purpose or something like that.
Oh, bottle artwork by Tyler Thomas.
There you go. So,
okay.
Yeah, it's definitely
nice work,
to
Tyler.
Me. I haven't, you know, we don't get their beer here in Savannah, Georgia, but I have seen numerous bottles from them, and this one is almost strikingly different from what they kind of normally do, which would be a lot of sort of line kind of drawing type things.
Yeah, linear woodcut kind of looking.
You know,
things.
Like they would have a, you know, if they were doing a barrel aged beer, it would be, you know, some barrels or that kind of thing. So this one is definitely different. I'm not sure exactly the reason for the change or this particular artist. Maybe they do a different artist every year with this beer or something of that mm-hmm. nature. I'm not sure, but it is definitely very different, and it's as soon as I grabbed it from the fridge, it stood out. I think I probably closed the fridge all the way this time. I'm not hearing any noises. So.
It is pretty chaotic, that illustration. Yeah. It's
a nice little piece though. I like it.
Yeah, but it's not your typical like here's a clean like you guys said. It's not a typical
yep.
clean illustration line art sort of thing for a beer bottle. It definitely looks like somebody's art that they either commissioned or licensed for the bottle
right.
because
mm-hmm.
they liked it or that. It seems like it's art on its own.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, jeez.
Cut out again. It's no Monsieur Ed, though.
Well, what is?
All right, so you guys are going to make me describe a stout again, aren't you?
Raymond, tell us what this stout looks like in a glass, would you?
Thanks, Keith.
All right, so, you know, it's a big old dark beer. What was really kind of striking about this one, though, was when Keith first poured it for us, poured with this big, thick, kind of coffee-looking head to it that has disappeared into almost nothing. Little swirl of it on the top of the beer, but it was really pretty when it came out of the bottle.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a bad... I mean, there, you know, there's a nice little... It settled quickly. You know, but this is also a glass that we were just drinking a different beer out of. We rinsed them out, but it's not a fresh, clean glass. Yeah. So I always like to give anything that's poured in that kind of way a little bit of a pass on its, you know, on its... on especially head retention, that kind of thing. But it is a big, you know, big dark stout, pretty much, which what you look for in this kind of beer. Aroma wise, gentlemen, how are you enjoying the smell of this beer?
This is lovely.
It smells so sweet. So that kind of chocolatey and
it's almost there's a to me like a big dark fruity note in this and too, and it's almost so sweet. You know, it's like this reminds me a lot of what you get in that kind of Cigar City beer. So many of their big barrel aged beers are so densely sugary sweet, especially even on the nose, on the taste often as well, but it kind of has a little bit of that going on where it's just like
brown sugar too.
Yeah,
there's more to it than just sweet. It's got
it's not just
flavor there.
Not just chocolate you know, and those kind of, and roasted malt. I mean, there are some layers going on here on the aroma. And this is aged in red wine barrels, so is anyone getting any particular barrel notes out of the aroma in this?
Not me in the aroma. Boy, in the flavor.
Oh, good. You already had some to drink.
Had a little sip.
Yep. Go ahead and lead us into that while I take a sip.
Really kind of, and we don't talk about mouthfeel very much, but man, is it thick and it coats the tongue. But you definitely get that oak. A little bit of that red wine is coming through too. That kind of tannic flavor, but it mixes with the sweetness really well.
I find the taste of this to be interesting. It's very distinctly milk stout.
Right.
It's I think we've had some milk stouts fairly recently on the podcast, or at least I have, that aren't necessarily that real classic milk stout flavor. And for a big imperial milk stout, it really retains that sort of milky lactose kind of flavor that you expect out of a milk stout. It does have some nice complementing complexity in the flavor, and the barrel does come out really well. But that's kind of the thing that's striking is I think sometimes you think about these big barrel-aged beers, no matter what kind of barrel they're in, and you almost expect the base beer to sort of go away in a sense, you know, and to sort of change back into something else that it's it wasn't to begin with, but really retaining that character.
I got to say, one of the main reasons I wanted to talk about this beer on the show and drink it with you guys is because I honestly don't love most milk stouts I come in contact with. I kind of, and even if I really like the beer, I don't like drinking a lot of it. And so that kind of, I don't know if it's the lactose, I don't know if it's just the mouthfeel or something about the body of the beer, but in general, I do not purchase, go out of my way to drink milk stouts. And I've also red wine barrels, not my favorite thing.
Really?
And so between those two aspects, I was like, I need to share this beer. This is going to be one that I want to not be responsible in 11 point whatever percent ABV. Okay, all these things together, I need to share this beer with other people. And I'm glad I did, but at the same time, I'm not, because this is really good.
Yeah, I really like the taste of this. I mean, you get that classic milk stout. You get a little bit of kind of chocolate. You said it before, brown sugar. I get this kind of brown sugar, almost just a little bit of nuttiness in there. And then it kind of goes into the oak and the red wine barrel. And I really like that red wine flavor that's coming out in this. Somehow it works on the tail end after a more typical sort of milky, chocolatey milk stout. But it's really working really well. There's a great balance to it. I don't think it's too sweet, but it's sweet enough to be, you know, that last beer of the night kind of sharing, sipping beer. I like it.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I don't know if I'm just beating the same horse here or not, but it has all those classic milk stout ingredients and, or in flavor base profile, which again, not my favorite thing, but the culmination of all that together in this glass, I just feel like is really pretty stellar.
Yeah.
And we're not the only ones who feel this way, you guys. This is currently rocking a 95 on Beer Advocate.
Yeah. I have noticed that we've had a couple of their beers now. And anytime I go to research anything they've done, I mean, they really have quite the fan base apparently, up there in Virginia and wherever else they distribute. So it's, and for good reason. I mean, I can't really think of a beer that I've had that I particularly haven't enjoyed from the brewery, you know?
4.26 caps over on Untappd for you Untappd fiends. This beer, a ruse from Hardywood Park, won the bronze in the Wood and Barrel Age Strong Stout category in the 2016 World Beer Cup. So got some award accolades for it as well. So it's not just us. Other people seem to like this beer as well. I want to really quickly give a shout out to Untappd user Rich W, who with his review of 4.5 caps for this on Untappd, said balls.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot.
That's very helpful.
Every now and then I feel like we need to, you know, reward some of the Untappd users mm-hmm. who are doing the good work to let people know about beers they like. Jeff A had this and said, sweet. Along with 4.5 caps.
Yeah.
So really strong Untappd.
I agree with both of those. I agree with both words. Balls. Sweet.
And the 4.5 caps. I mean, that's a pretty strong rating, but it's a pretty good beer. I mean, yeah, I think that's and if you are someone who likes red wine barrels mm-hmm. and milk stouts, you may even go higher on it. This may be just right in your wheelhouse, for sure, if you can get it. I mentioned this beer has a lot of positive feedback and reviews, and we will share one of those with you now with the real experts on Beer Review Theater.
To beer or not to beer, it's time for Beer Review Theater.
There are so many places we can go for reviews when it comes to Beer Review Theater, and sometimes we like to showcase some different places, but not this time. We're going to Beer Advocate, beeradvocate.com. This is Ruse, Hardywood Park. This reviewer, Kev Sal, K-E-V-S-A-L, uh-huh. Has reviewed this beer, and I'm not going to pretend to know anything about Kev Sal, where he's from or she or what they have done in the craft beer world, how experienced they are. I'm just going to let you judge from this review for yourself. Kev Sal gave this a 4.42 out of 5, a look of 4.5, a smell of 4.25, a taste of 4.5, a feel of 4.25, and an overall of 4.5. This is a little confusing because the username is Kev Sal, and the person they're thinking in the review is Kevin. So I'm not sure if Kev Sal is thanking him or herself with that, or if there is another Kev in Kev Sal's circle. But here we go. Thanks, Kevin. You always blow me.
What? What?
I think he meant blow me away.
I don't know, man. Maybe not.
I got to tell you, it's the whole reason I picked this review. It's the first line. Thanks, Kevin. You always blow me. 750 poured into a perfect stout glass. Looks great. Super dark, dark chocolate head. Awesome label. Aroma is muted at first, but as soon as it comes up, it's great. Wine and barrel come first. Great roasted malts in sweet. Taste is fantastic. Wine barrel with the base is phenomenal. Might be the best wine barrel beer I've had in a long time. Great balance in this one with a big, roasted, and tasty base. Mouthfeel is thick and juicy. Flavor coats the younger and lingers. Zero alk.
Autocorrect.
Whatever. Zero alk. Overall, this is another home run. The base is fantastic. I've had it before and loved it. Had it in apple brandy barrels and loved. Now I'm having it in wine barrels and love it. Just a notch below the AB version. Hardywood has it right. It's Kev Sal, everybody.
We've got to videotape these.
I gotta tell you, I wonder if it was a mistake because he really likes the mouthfeel to be thick and juicy. So, you know, maybe he meant what he said early on. I don't know.
Coats the younger and lingers. That's the part. Tongue. Yes. Tongue. It's it was an autocorrect of tongue, right?
Yes.
Okay, I just want to make sure that there's some small semblance of a way out for Kev Salver in that review. I just want to lay the legal base that it was probably...
I mean, maybe he was drinking the whole bottle. He was doing this at the end, you know, where he has gotten all of his notes in order and started to type badly.
Yeah. A lot of really thoughtful reviews for this beer. Only 19 written reviews on Beer Advocate for it. And most of those are pretty long and use words like Tootsie Roll and subtly smoky and... Well, the smoky I don't get.
Yeah. Tootsie Roll. That's not bad. Yeah. I wouldn't have picked it out. There are beers that you do pick that out and it's very distinct. I wouldn't have picked that out, but now that you throw that out there, I'm like, yeah, I get kind of a little Tootsie Roll thing.
Well, from going through these reviews, and I don't have a spec sheet on this beer, so I don't know all the history and legacy of it, but we had Trickery on the podcast, right, from Hardywood
yes.
Park?
Mm-hmm.
And so this is part of a series that uses the same base beer. So there's Trickery and Foolery and Ruse.
Okay. All right. So it's the same milk stout. Okay. That's mm-hmm. right. Mm-hmm.
There you go. So I'm glad to have a chance to do this. We should get our hands on Foolery and complete the...
Yes, we need to complete the Trinity.
We're collectors. We must collect them all. Hey, speaking of, how's your Pokemon coming, Raymond? Last time I heard, you were really close to getting them all. He's just waving. He's just not shaking his head and waving me off. Okay. I guess I know how to take a hint. Unlike that Kevin guy. I don't know what's up with that. So obviously, I think it's from hearing all of us talk about Ruse here, this is a recommended beer. If you have the opportunity to get this, I know a lot of Hardywood's beers, especially these special releases like this, are hard to get. Sometimes it's you have to go to the brewery to get your hands on them on a certain day or know somebody in the distribution pipeline or mm-hmm. be there right when they go out on the shelves. So I know they turn over fast. So if you have the opportunity, if you've got a mule in Virginia...
Yeah, I mean, yeah. If you have the opportunity to show up when this is showing up, I'd say you need to go for it. It's good, very good.
One other thing I want to mention about our first beer that we had today. So the Monsieur Ed. Again, we don't do any homework on any of these beers before we talk about it. But I was looking around to see if I could find a really interesting review of that one, perhaps, for the Beer Review Theater. I did find a review of this beer from the Broward Palm Beach New Times on BrowardPalmBeach.com. And they have some additional real-world information about this beer. And the brewers touted this as being a fodder fermented Saison with horse feed and Brett. So there's horse feed in it.
All right. Well,
That's not surprising. I've had, we may have even had this on the podcast. I had a Saint Somewhere beer that was made from, I mean, they're in the middle of a horse pasture and they occasionally will throw in grain from their feed bin into the beer. Cause it's all the same stuff.
Yeah, it is. It's just kind of fun that there's a horse. And they have horse feed in it.
Yeah.
Well, and maybe that's what gives the horse the hair on his chest.
Maybe so.
Yeah.
It's just in the shape of a heart.
Yeah,
of course.
It is heart-shaped hair.
For more about us and Brew Drink Run and all our heart-shaped hair, go to brewdrinkrun.com. Follow us on Twitter at brewdrinkrun or on Facebook at facebook.com/brewdrinkrun. Plus, all our writers are also on tap. If you want to be part of the show, email us at team at brewdrinkrun.com. Update us on your homebrew, your running training, or hit us to your favorite beer destination. Even better than email would be sending us an audio. It's as simple as calling us at 781-76-DRINK. That's 781-763-7465. We've got Brew Drink Run t-shirts and technical running shirts available at our website. I slowed down for the important parts,
yes.
The phone number and the buy stuff. Go to our website and click on the store link. Our theme music is provided by our friends at Morning Lights. Thank you all for joining us. We'll see you around town.
Maybe.
At the park.
Maybe. Probably.
Cycling around.
Could be.
All right.
Drinking.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers. Go and work for a pharmaceutical commercial company.
Or Micro Machines. Remember the Micro Machine guy?
Oh, the Micro Machine guy. That's great.
I think our next group photo should involve, should be shirtless with heart shaped hair on our. You can Photoshop that. Right?
Yeah. I'm not sure. I'm not sure. Everything's starting to make sense, you guys.